Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your host from SteelersDepot.com, where you can find all your latest and greatest Steelers news. It's Dave Bryan and Alex Cazzora, always Lynn, talking Steelers. And now, here's Dave and Alex.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast, Season 13, Episode 66. He's Dave Bryan. I'm Alex Cazzora, SteelersDepot.com. Thank you for being back with us here this special Sunday edition of the podcast. A very Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays to all of Steelers Nation. And what a great gift last night, Dave, the Pittsburgh Steelers, beating the Las Vegas Raiders 13-10 on Christmas Eve to move to 7-8. On the season and keep their playoff hopes alive. So, wow, what a game, what a win.
So you're saying there's a chance, huh?
You keep saying that.
Yeah. I wrote long after the game ended talking about the playoff chances. It is what it is. It's still down there, but I don't think Saturday could have gone any better for the Pittsburgh Steelers. You know, obviously, in light of things, you would obviously hope that, you know, Franco would have still been here to take all this in, but this team had a lot of reasons to win Saturday night. Not only for their own, playoff lives, but the 50th anniversary of the Immaculate Reception and the honoring of Franco Harris and his jersey being retired. And unfortunately, that honoring included honoring his passing as well, too. So, kind of bittersweet all in all, right? They did what they had to do and, in dramatic fashion at that. And everybody can wake up Sunday, Christmas morning and, feel pretty good, I think, right now in light of everything.
Absolutely. And this is why we love sports, Dave, because 50 years ago, the Steelers beat the Raiders scoring 13 points, winning the game with less than a minute to go on a touchdown by a rookie. And then 50 years later, they do the same. There was no Immaculate Reception 2.0, nothing that dramatic and historic, but the parallels are kind of eerie. And it just was a really cool moment and atmosphere last night.
It's weird how things kind of work out that way, right? How the stars align on certain things and a lot of emotion, obviously, last night. And once again, this was a big game, the Franco stuff aside and the 50th anniversary of the Immaculate Reception aside. This was a big game overall. And it was kind of, it wasn't all that great of a game, overall, probably from an execution standpoint. But, when it mattered the most, they drove down the field and, I kind of consider it Mike Tomlin, so many words said, this was a grow up game for the Steelers. And it really was, I feel, because and Kenny Pickett as well, too. Freezing cold, you're down. You haven't been able to get into the end zone all game. And, the game's on the line and you go down and you deliver a touchdown like that. So, kudos to Kenny Pickett and, wasn't worried about him being poised, right? That wasn't his first time playing in that stadium in a big game and big moments, such as that. But, he was poised and, they executed, got to move the football. Najee, a couple of nice, yards after catch, Freiermuth and, Obviously, the big play into the end zone on the post to George Pickens, who, you know, really nice stemming of the route there. And interesting to see the it will be interesting to see kind of the end zone view, see if Kenny looked like that safety got held in the middle of the field somehow. Maybe it was by his eyes. I don't know. Maybe it was by Pickens widening that thing out. But yeah, big win.
The reason beyond the emotions of the game and the weight of the game, I picked Pittsburgh to beat the Raiders. And of course, we both picked, I think most people picked the Steelers to win. But the football reason for it was because the Steelers find ways to win those close games. And granted, they came into this one, 5-5 on the year, one possession games. But the Raiders had consistently blown leads, consistently lost late. And they had never been a team that's been able to finish down the stretch, at least not this season. And Pittsburgh was able to. And it certainly was ugly and messy and frustrating for most of the game. But when the game was on the line, it was Pittsburgh making the plays. And they've consistently done that better than the Raiders this year. And that's why I picked Pittsburgh. And that's what happened. So let's start here with the Steelers defense, because I think although it was Kenny Pickett leading that great game-winning drive, if it wasn't for the play of the Steelers defense, especially in the second half, there is no opportunity for a game-winning drive. This defense, Dave, played like the 70s. I mean, they played lights out.
Yeah, you know, sans the opening drive there where, man, they come out. You knew that they had to shut down, you know, Josh Jacobs in this game. And the Raiders got things going early on the ground, and Jacobs seemed to be running at will and downhill. And the Raiders, you know, converted, you know, a couple of big third downs there. You know, how do you not get off the field in a 3rd-and-13 or 3rd-and-17? I forget exactly what it was, you know, to a little dump off pass to a backup running back, and you let him convert. And the touchdown pass to Renfro over to the right side. I mean, Cameron Sutton just missed. Yes, you want to talk about a game of inches. He just missed that. Then, you know, a kind of a missed tackle opportunity, I guess you could call it, over there. And then they're up 7-0. And after that, though, they really did kind of settle down. Now the Raiders still moved the ball at certain points of the game, but you know, they only managed one more field goal, and that was at the end of the half. And that's another situation that, man, you kick the football back to them with a 1:49 left, and you're thinking, all right, let's just get off the field and at worst just go into the locker room without giving up any more points and get the opening kickoff in the second half. They gave up a big play to Waller. But, you know, that was really – that was the only explosive play that the defense gave up in the game. And, unfortunately, that obviously ended in 3 points there. But, really, from that point forward, man, just – it really was lights-out defense. And you come out and the Raiders' first possession that they got the ball in the second half, you know, one play, get an interception there. The next one was only 5 plays and an interception. And from there, it was 6 plays, 5 plays, 3 plays, 2 plays. And how many plays is that? Let's see. That's 6, 12 – 22 plays the Raiders ran in the second half on 6 possessions.
And 3 of those ended in interceptions. And so they were short drives and yeah, Pittsburgh's defense. I mean, at some point last night, I was wondering how many times can the Steelers defense be asked to make a stand and step up? Eventually, they're going to have to break. The Raiders have too much firepower, and Pittsburgh answered the call every single time. I mean, every single time in that second half, they were as dominant can be, run game, pass game, getting pressure, taking the football away. Even when off the Kenny Pickett interception, Raiders have good field position, get the interception literally the next play off that tip drill pick by Arthur Millett. You cannot sing their praises enough. And the man that played the best of a very good defensive performance was Cam Hayward, who had the best game of his season with 2 sacks and a very colorful stat line, but maybe one of the best games of his entire career. He was a guy that understood the weight of the moment last night from the very first snap and played like it.
Oh, absolutely. And boy, that bull rush of his early on to get that sack and really, you know, in essence through the left guard into Carr to help get the sack there, and was winning his battles when he needed to win. And I think even on what the Highsmith snap or sack, what Hayward responsible really for the main pressure on that play there. But yeah, it was just a tremendous game on his part. And statistically it stands out as well too, as you pointed out.
Lovingly, in an article this morning that I did breaking down some of the bull rushes that Hayward had in this game on his sacks, I called Kim Hayward Freddy Krueger, because he lives in rookie left guard's nightmares. Aside from Cole Strange, we won't talk about that. But aside from him, that was Dylan Parham, the rookie left guard, who's played well for the Raiders. Vinny on Friday talked about how good of a season Parham was having, and Hayward schooled him pass game, run game. I mean, it was just a complete dominant performance. And so for anybody who thought, is Hayward getting too old? Is he over the hill? Is there regression? Resounding no last night.
Yeah, quite the answer, too, from not getting in the Pro Bowl, too, right? You
know, good point.
On top of it there. Look, I mean, I didn't think Derek Carr was all that great. I mean, he you know, missed several throws, but a couple of those interceptions there were off the hands of his players and all. And, it obviously wasn't good enough in there, but you know, pressure and you know, what was the stat going into this game about Derek Carr in 32 or less degree weather? It was something like 0-4 or 0-5. And look, I mean, they and you know, props to them for shutting down not only Josh Jacobs but Devontae Adams as well too, and that was something that really needed to happen in this game. You know, going into this thing, you think, oh, blistery conditions. At least I did. I thought, man, it's going to be run. You're not going to see a lot of passing in this game, but I guess the wind wasn't that bad. I mean, both these teams really came out and said, hey, we think we can throw in this game, and you know. As mentioned, the Raiders had the big play to Waller, but and then obviously the touchdown to Renfro. But outside of that, you know, they really didn't do all that much of damage in the passing game. Sure, there was that dump off that we mentioned early, you know, on the third down, but that's just a lack of rallying to the football and making the tackle, short of the chains in that situation there. But kudos all around. I mean, there were a couple that you know, Carr probably should have hit too, right? Sure, one in kind of like a cover two hole shot, I guess, over the top of Sutton. And but look, I mean, the other team gets paid to play as well too, and it's up to them to make plays in, like Mike Tomlin says, weighty downs or weighty situations. And they certainly didn't do that in the second half of that game.
Usually when we talk about facing an opponent's superstars, their top guys, you talk about minimizing, not stopping, because you understand they're going to be involved in their game plan, their top players for a reason. They're going to get theirs. But frankly, Dave, Josh Jacobs and Devontae Adams, to your point, were completely stopped last night. Jacobs, 15 carries, 44 yards, his worst yards per carry output of the season by far, 2.9. Devontae Adams, 2 receptions, 15 yards on 9 targets. Carr wanted to give him the football. I think he missed a couple he would like to have back, but 2 for 15 for Adams in this one. One of the best receivers in football. Waller had the big catch, but aside from that, he was quiet. I was worried Renfro was going to be the annoying thorn in the Steelers' side, and he kind of was, but you'd rather lose to Hunter Renfro than Devontae Adams. And so their stars were not just minimized on Saturday night. They were shut down.
Yeah, and my 5 keys, I said, no birthday celebrations for Devontae Adams.
It was his birthday.
Yeah, it was his birthday. Oh. So, you know, I kind of played along with that in my 5 keys post, along with my no joshing around when it came to Josh Jacobs there. But, you know, the two, I mean, it was no secret going into this thing who you kind of had to stop, and that was the big plays from Devontae Adams and the running game attached to Josh Jacobs. And and I think I even said, you know, in the show the other day, the Friday show, that you gotta make Carr and those other players beat you. And it was a huge, you know, boom for them to get guys like Waller and Renfro back for starting last week and then into this game. They probably thought, man, we get those two guys back now at this point, we can make a run at this thing. And I'm with you. I was a little bit more worried about Waller than I was Renfro, and especially with Terrell Edmunds being inactive for this game. Right. You know, we kind of wondered that of all the guys on the injury report, you know, that's probably the guy to watch when, you know, Edmunds, when it, and he obviously ended up being inactive for the game because of that hamstring injury there. So within that, I thought, you know, what are they going to do with, and, you know, Miles Jack was banged up, but he did play. They had him, you know, I guess on a snap count of some degree there, because Robert Spillane played every snap in that game, if you can believe
he did.
It. Yeah, wow. Yeah, that's what the game book says there. And it did feel like Robert Spillane was on the field quite a bit there. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, look, I mean, Mike Tomlin after the game, you know, said, look, the plan was to take away Jacobs and Adams. And, you know, as you pointed out, man, two catches, wow, for Adams. Big.
Yeah, I mean, most coaches say our plan is to take away Adams and Jacobs. Most coaches can't do that just because it's Adams and it's Jacobs. And for Pittsburgh, for all their warts, they've done over the Tomlin era a really good job of making teams play left-handed, take away their stars and make other guys win. And sometimes Pittsburgh loses to those other guys. But I think about that game against the Rams. I think in 2019, Cooper Kupp held without a catch. I mean, just stuff like that where they do a great job of taking away your top weapons, make your plan B, your plan C type guys step up. And that's what happened against the Raiders. But yeah, great second half performance, great pressure. Cam Hayward, two sacks, Highsmith, the sack. And the play of the secondary was fantastic, making plays on the football. I know there were some tips and some maybe missed throws by Carr, but still those tip drill moments and reactions by Millett, by Fitzpatrick. Oh, by the way, the last time Arthur Millett picked off a pass was 2020. Wow. Against the Raiders, against Derek Carr. So wow. Apparently that is Millett's guy, is Derek Carr. And then Cam Sutton. I mean, I know he had those drops in the Dolphins game. Everybody on the defense did that night, but he has had some incredible catches for interceptions this year. He's got hands like a receiver, and that pick he had downfield, I mean, that was one of the best catches you'll see from a cornerback.
Yeah, like he caught the back end of the football on that one, and shame on Derek Carr for missing that one as well, too. You know, you look at the four biggest plays that the Raiders had in this game. Obviously, the 34-yarder to Waller late in the first half there. Their other three longest plays were 17. We know what that one was, right? The third and 16 conversion to Abdullah. And then, you know, that wasn't as much of a distance thing as it was, you know, after the catch thing. The 14-yard completion to Renfro on the touchdown, and then a 12-yarder. I'm having a hard time remembering exactly which one this was, but a short right pass to Devontae Adams with 11:48 in the second quarter there. Those were their four longest offensive plays in general there. So if they're not, you know, this is a Raiders offense that's been known to get a few chunks. And look, and I wrote this up the other day as well too. Devontae Adams came into this game, I think, fourth in the NFL in explosive plays. And I think like second in the NFL or third in the NFL in double explosive plays. So to keep that guy at bay like they did Saturday night was absolutely huge and a big difference maker for sure.
So the Raiders only had two plays in that game that went longer than 15 yards. Is that accurate?
Right. Wow. The Waller catch and then the pass to Abdullah on the 3rd and 16.
I mean, when's the last time that happened? I got to find a stat on the weird on that. Last time a team had, only two plays of 15 plus yards. And then Josh Jacobs was a big play guy as well. He came into the game second in the NFL with 37 runs of 10 plus yards. I think he had just one in this game. His long was 11. And so he minimized the big plays. Full team defense contributions across the board. Hayward started that, but played really good team run defense. That's an 11-man job to stop Jacobs, to stop that run game. secondary made plays, took the football away, won on possession downs, the Raiders 6-12, which I guess is okay, but second half, some big third down stops. There are no doubt about it. So it really was a great showing overall.
I forgot to try to cue in on the on that long run that Jacobs got taken away from him. What was it? A face mask on that?
Yeah, that was your guy, Foster Moreau.
Oh, that's right.
And that was a clear call. It was a face full of face mask to Alex Highsmith.
Okay. Boy, my guy, Foster Moreau, didn't have a good game, did he?
No, because he had the tip that was in the pick. And really, that face mask, again, we'll do Tyler Wise's job for him. That could be a big turning point there to negate right. that one and back them. I forget the whole context, but that was, I'm sure, a pretty weighty play.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, because it was a – That was marked, I think, 15 yards from the original line of scrimmage. Was it not?
I'm trying to find. It was second half. I'm trying to find exactly when.
Yeah,
that play
yeah.
Was,
it was left end 218 with 218 in the third quarter of the game, and it was a 36 yard run down.
That was 36. Wow.
Yeah, down to the Steelers' 23 yard line. And the face mask penalty obviously not only erased that, but then it became a first and 25 from Vegas's own 26 yard line. So what's 36
yeah, what's the swing?
And 15? That's 51. That's half a football field.
That's 51 yards. Wow. Yeah.
You want to talk about hidden yardage, and yeah, you're right. And yeah. And obviously we don't, you know, we try not to influence Tyler's post and all like that, but man, that was a huge swing play, because once again, late in the third quarter there, and it goes from them almost being guaranteed, or what you think would be nearly guaranteed. No such thing as a guaranteed field goal last night, but or around the NFL for that matter. Man, you got Justin Tucker missing them, and all. But yeah, I mean, you go from a situation where it looks like they might get another 3 points out of it to you know, nothing for them. And then not only that drive ended with the Cole punt of 29 yards.
Yeah, he really struggled. He was hitting off the side of his left foot last night for sure. And so that punt put Pittsburgh at their 45, created a short field that resulted in a field goal for Chris Boswell. So to me, that may be the turning point, the defining moment of the game that's very easy to forget about. But overall, great defensive show, and cannot say enough about the job those guys did, the way they stepped up. Real briefly before we switch over to the offense, I wanted to, and I'm mentioning this late in the podcast here, but mention some of the housekeeping. As you mentioned, Terrell Edmonds inactive in this game. The team made a roster move on Saturday, promoting Elijah Riley to the 53-man roster and waiving cornerback Josh Jackson in a corresponding. Is that Riley officially on the 53? Is that the move?
Yeah, that's the move. He's on the 53 now, okay. Because they waived Josh Jackson now.
Okay. Just making sure that made sense to me there. Inactives included Mark Robinson. I know that made some people upset, but with Miles Jack healthy, kind of expected overall.
We warned him.
Yep, and Edmonds again being inactive there. And so in-game injuries, according to Mike Tomlin, he'll have an update on Tuesday. Trey Norwood with a hamstring and Marcus Allen with a bicep. Norwood left about, I think, first half and was ruled out. So we'll see if he can get back.
He left on the Waller play.
Was it the Waller play? Okay, gotcha.
Right, and he grabbed right at it, too. I was watching that back last night, and I don't think he's going to be back. That the way he grabbed at it, and you know, this late in the season, that might do it for him.
Yeah, that's tough. It's been a tough year for Norwood. He gave up to partially responsible for the touchdown getting juked by Renfro. He's not really had that second-year jump I thought he might. But I mean, maybe kudos to Elijah Riley for probably picking up snaps, because there was no Edmonds. You lost Norwood. I mean, I don't know exactly how many snaps Riley played, but he's probably getting some decent burn in his second half in some of those passing situations. So, and then Casey, of course, starting there. So those are the injuries. But to flip over to the offensive side of the football.
Real quick, yeah. About the one on Marcus Allen there. I was trying to pay attention as I was rewatching the game. To see if I could pick up, he was in the game. He was in the game, I think, for nearly the whole game, or at least until late in the game. So I never saw where that injury happened. Okay. So hopefully that's not a serious injury with him. And to mop up what you left on Riley there, 10 snaps for him on defense, 7 on special teams.
Okay. Maybe Marcus Allen heard it flexing on the Raiders sideline during a punt. Did that happen at all? No.
I don't know, but I tell you what, I think I don't know if they're if they'll be able to identify. They'll probably will on a TV tape though. The unsportsmanlike penalty at the end after the at the end was Edmonds on the field, right? Or no?
Was it? I could not tell who it was because they had the big jacket and like the ski mask on. So that would make sense, but I could not tell who it was.
That was it. If indeed that was, that's an expensive hamstring.
Hamstring looking okay, I guess.
Hamstring probably, injury. I don't know for sure, but I think that might have been. And I don't know if they'll fine for that or not. We'll see.
Probably will. That's. I guess you have to be in uniform. That happened in. That's the Super Bowl last year where Eli Apple or something came running out and got called.
Yeah,
for that.
I think you're right. Something like that.
Anyway. For the Steelers offense, I mean, there isn't a lot more to say than what we kind of already said. They were terrible throughout. They couldn't finish drives. They couldn't sustain. Kenny Pickett throws a pick. They could move the ball to some extent. They weren't always going three and out, but they were just stalling with that, barely getting the field goal range and questionable decisions by both, I think, Matt Canada and Mike Tomlin. But it all worked out in the end on that game-winning drive. But prior to that, this offense was miserable.
And that's kind of been the storyline for the last, four or five games. You know, they got over the hump. They started, started finally moving the football, but they just couldn't get, punch it in into the end zone there. So that was kind of the continuation of the storyline, moving the football, just not scoring points or specifically touchdowns. And so there is that. Look, I thought maybe they got away from the running game maybe a little bit too early there. But, then you had Perryman go out in the second half there. I thought they should have tried to run up the middle more. It seemed like they were having the most success up the middle there. I kind of felt like they just didn't lean on that run enough, especially early there. I thought they maybe could have worn that defense down a little bit more. And then again on the in some of the play call, the third and whatever it was tossed to
third
Warren.
Two.
Yeah, that was high diddle, just send somebody up the middle there. You know, don't try to get too cute. And the other situation I think was the was a Watt short yardage one. And you know, I know they try to put lipstick on the pig with using him in a different way with kind of that flare out against Baltimore. But I kind of had a sense when Watt was in there, he was going to get the ball on that one there. But the running game overall was kind of like they either got a yard or they got 6 yards. It felt like, in that situation, because there were some longer runs in this game, but overall, I don't think the yards per carry were all that. And we'll have to see what the successful run rate was. Obviously one of those runs was a jet sweep at the end for 21 yards to put the game away. And nobody saw that one coming. So that was great timing on that one. Pickett a couple of scrambles, I think, as well, too. But I think combined Najee and Warren, 76 yards on, 22 carries overall. So something like around, I don't know, what was that, 3.4, 3.5 yards per carry. Not great. Neither one of them had an explosive run, but it was enough, Mm-hmm.
That third and two toss gave me very big 2017 Jacksonville playoff game vibes in that moment there. So didn't love that call. I didn't like the idea of coming out throwing. That seemed to be Pittsburgh's approach. Won't even RPOs. They mm-hmm. were design throws. And you saw the Raiders come out running and have their early success. You had the terrible running back screen the first play after the, I think it was the Millett interception or the Minka pick, one of the two. Just some stuff there I did not like. But the Hayward tight end jet sweep, a nice call. For sure. And he did duff late in that game. But yeah, just some of the approach, some of the play calling and big situational football I didn't like. Guys made plays. Freiermuth made plays. The running backs got hot late in the game. Najee checked down machine, getting some of those key yardage to put Pittsburgh in you know, red zone type situations. Jalen Warren ran hard. Deontay Johnson making some plays. George Pickens, you know, showing off his versatility. We've talked about how he's expanded his route tree and he's more than a vertical receiver. He was used in the slot more, big third down slant early in the game, the game winning touchdown over slot on a little skinny post route, kind of that old bang eight. So, you know, you got some of those key contributions from a lot of your young skill guys.
I got my wish, right? I said they need to start throwing to these running backs a little bit more. And I think nine total targets for Najee, six receptions for him. And Warren had two targets and one reception. So in total, they had seven receptions in this game, but from their two running backs and 49 total yards. So it was good to see them use the running backs a little bit more out of the backfield. And thankfully, Najee didn't catch that one near the end of the game. That ended up working out in the Steelers' favor that way. That Jalen Warren, something, man. Let me tell you, it won't show up in the box score, but on that one catch that he did have, he did a lot of work on that play, did he not?
Yeah, he was chipping the right the end and then released and then kind of got in a mini scramble drill, got in Pickett's vision and made the catch to convert. So I love watching that guy play. The one run that he had, he's bouncing off of Mason Cole, just bouncing off the guys and just keeps on moving for a decent gain. He's got a downhill demeanor. He's a big ball of energy. He's a lot of fun. And he's had one heck of a season.
Look, you know, several years ago, Le'Veon Bell was, you know, in his prime, was one hell of a pass protector, right?
Oh, yeah.
Warren's not too damn far from him, I don't think. he is pretty good at eating up the grass and taking on defenders.
Yeah, I mean, that goes back to some of the backs on backers stuff. That was the first thing I ever noticed with Jalen Warren, that I said, hey, this guy might be something, because the first day in pads is the first day they do their backs on backers drill. It comes very early in practice. And, you know, Warren not only was aggressive and wasn't fearful, he was, you know, succeeding. He was thriving in that environment in training camp. So you wish maybe he was a little bit bigger, he could handle an anchor a little bit better, but for his size and just for the position overall throughout his size, you know, he does a really good job.
Here's the thing. I don't remember him being really asked to do that all that much, at least on the Oklahoma State tape. Do you remember?
I don't. You probably watched more than I did, and I don't think I did the official report on Warren. So, you know, I don't know how much they throw the ball a lot, and they throw the ball probably pretty quick with that spread system. So I imagine they weren't doing the stuff they're doing in the NFL.
Yeah, Freiermuth, boy, he now has 60 catches on the season, and he had 60 last year. And, you know, one of the things, you know, you and I think both highlighted during the offseason is, man, he's got to get his yards per reception up. And even Freiermuth had an interview or two or three talking about, you know, has to, you know, do a better job of, or, you know, just the hope was that his yards per reception would go up. This year, he has 60 catches now for 696 yards. Last year, he had 60 catches for 497 yards. That's damn near 200 yards difference on the same. Actually, it's what? Yeah, 199 yards difference on the same amount of catches. His yards per catch has jumped from 8.3 to 11.6. Now, his touchdowns are obviously down, 9 last year versus 2 this year. I think, you know, at some point moving forward in his career, that will get back going, or at least hopefully go back in the other direction there. And, man, he had some nice yak, specifically in like two or three of those catches last night, and this, one of them on that final drive as well, too. So for a guy that had zero targets, zero catches a week ago against the Panthers, he had a pretty damn good game against the Raiders Saturday night.
He did. Again, 2-minute drill as the Raiders defense was playing too high, playing a lot of soft zone, kind of expanding vertically. It opened up underneath throws to Najee, to Freiermuth. And so those guys played key roles to set up the game-winning score. I'm looking at some of the numbers here for Freiermuth. The single-season record for receptions by tight end is 76 by Heath Miller in 09. I don't know if Freiermuth's going to quite get there, but he's going to be very, very close. And how many yards does Freiermuth have?
696.
Okay, so the record is 942, which again, he probably won't get, but he'll be close. He'll probably finish maybe third, maybe even second in team history for a single season by a Steelers tight end in his second year.
I mean, I think he can get at least 104 more receiving yards, I would think, in two games, right? That's not out of the question.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
So that's 800 yards, right?
Yeah, if he gets to 817, he'll have more yards than Heath Miller ever had in the season. So, yeah, regardless of the numbers, I don't want to get in the weeds of that. You know, he's had the blocking just needed some work, and he did have the drop on third down in this game, a little high from Pickett, but still a catchable ball, but certainly made up for it with some clutch catches late.
Absolutely.
Kenny Pickett's performance in this one, you know, had it not been for the game-winning drive, I think it was a pretty lackluster game. Throws that sailed high, dealing with blitzes, probably not seeing the field all that well. That interception, I know there was some pressure, pretty brutal play, but you make the big play at the end of the game. That's all people will remember.
Yeah, a couple of high throws, but he didn't, you know, a couple of those were, it'd be interesting to see some of the end zone views on some of those that maybe went off Deontay's hands and the one to Freiermuth. And all like the interception was just tough, man. Cause he's looking one way, he whips around and he's got a defender, that had walked Dan Moore Jr. right back on top of him. I guess the moral of the story is he just got to eat that one all together. I don't know how much, he was actually, it looked like maybe he couldn't kind of follow through, that he just turned and just tried to get rid of it. Kind of not knowing, you know, not knowing who was there, and it went right to the Raiders player in that situation. At that point, you're thinking, oh man, you're just starting to drive again as well too. But luckily one play later, you get the football back there. It was an up and down game for him, but once again, I think, I mean, the most important drive of that game was the next to last one, right? And really poised, and you know, even that drive, there was a couple of throws that probably could have been better. We weren't there; the conditions obviously weren't favorable. There were a couple of those early in the game though that he was drilling it.
Yeah, the one slants. The slant to Pickens. I mean, there were some plays early, but maybe the most underrated play was, and I believe it came on that next to last drive, that game-winning touchdown drive, where Pickett tried to throw the check down left side to Harris, and it was high, and Harris leapt and batted it down, because I think if Harris does not touch that football, I think that's an interception. And so you talk about those hidden plays there. Again, Pickett kind of missing high throughout that game. That's one of those plays where you sit there and say, looking back, that might have saved your game, might have saved your season.
Yeah, look, there were both sides of this thing too. There are a couple balls that, you know, man, how did they land in the grass and not somebody else's hands in it? This is part of this maturation process, right? You know, there we knew there's going to be hiccups along the way in here with him, and the two things that we've been watching still, we're still kind of watching for, kind of, because he did bury the red zone trip at the end there. And, you know, what have we been saying? We need to see Kenny Pickett finish some of these red zone drives with touchdown passes, you know, and he did. There was a couple of nice third down conversions in this game, a little bit longer than 4 or 5 yards that he converted. So, I'm not mad at it overall. I mean, there were throws that I'm sure he'd like to have back, but, in the end, when the chips are on the table there, he was able to get them down the field. And, once again, I can't wait to see the end zone view of the Pickens touchdown pass to see, you know, what he did with his eye. And here's another thing is there were a couple of extended plays by him as well too, you know, with him keeping his eyes up too. So, that's another element too. He's not going to ever be a Patrick Mahomes or anything like that, but you got to have a quarterback with the wherewithal and the mobility to be able to extend some plays and make something happen. And he did that a couple of times in this game as well.
And I think since the bye, maybe the biggest area I've seen him improve in, besides just kind of the general take care of the football, be more willing to throw the football away. And I think I think he threw like had like five throwaways in this game. So very much, you know, wanted to make sure he took care of it. And that was good to see. But he's done a really good job of scrambling to throw and not scrambling to run. Right. I think when he first got in, and understandably, you know, mobility is an asset for quarterbacks that are trying to figure it out as they work, as they try to win. He would take off at the first sign of trouble. And now he's keeping his eyes downfield, as you said, as he scrambles. He'll still run if he has to, if it's third down or a big weighty moment, or if the open space is there and it's obvious. But he is keeping his eyes downfield, scrambling to throw, as opposed to let's scramble and take off and try to do it all on our own.
And then there's another situation where he doesn't take the stack of Crosby there when he's left on, you know, left to come right at him. He drills it right into the ground and fights for another down, you know, lives to fight another down instead of what could have been a 7-yard sack. You know?
Right. No sacks in this game in right. Pittsburgh. I think it's only the second time of the season Pittsburgh has not been sacked in a game. And I know the Raiders don't have a fierce pass rush, but they have Max Crosby. Now they lost Chandler Jones in this one, and that helped Pittsburgh, but still to keep it clean on 40 plus dropbacks is impressive.
I tell you, Crosby, for lack of a better word, was quiet in this game.
Yeah. What was his stat line? Speaking of stars, talk about taking the offensive stars. What did Crosby do on the stat sheet defensively?
He had 4 total tackles and 4 quarterback hits.
Okay. Well, 4 hits. I mean, yeah. A little bit loud there, but no sacks, no game changing type plays, I guess.
I think one of the other things I would have liked Kenny to do on one of those scrambles out to the right, he kind of double pumped, didn't know if he wanted to throw it or if he wanted to run. And then when he did throw it, the defender had dropped back there.
The one in Najee.
Yeah. If you're going to throw it, you know?
Right. For sure. Now I will say with Crosby in the run game, I thought the tight ends were probably, they did not block well, but they were asking to do too much. Some of that split zone stuff against Max Crosby. Good luck. You're not going to have a good time trying to do that. So some of that schematic stuff I didn't love from Canada,
but I'll tell you what, and I've been down, you know, down on Hayward and his blocking. All he did have a nice early cut block on a split zone when he was moving right to left, that him and along with blocked by, I think it was Dan Moore, open up a nice little hole early there.
Yeah, like I said, if you want Hayward on split zone, split flow, cut block. He can't be on his feet. You can cut him, fine, we'll make it work. But you can't have him stay on his feet and try to block on those concepts. So overall, and then just a very clean game for all the penalties Pittsburgh had last week.
Those officials wanted that game to move.
I think
along.
The whistles were so frozen they actually couldn't be whistled. But yeah, 3 penalties in this game.
Zero in the first half, right?
By either team, correct?
Either team.
So yeah, a very 5 penalties total in this one. So very clean despite the conditions, which probably is the refs cold and just not wanting to move around too much. But any final thoughts here? Special teams, Mike Tomlin's decision to kick a 52-yard field goal as opposed to go for it on 4th and 4. Heck, I think a punt would have been a better idea than 52 yards. I know it's Boz. I know he excels in those moments, but given the weather, given the first one to push left, I mean, you're just asking for disaster. I think a really poor decision by Mike Tomlin.
Yeah, it's not like it's 8 yards or 12 yards or something. It's 4 yards, man. And I mean, at worst, if you get the right defense, let Kenny Pickett maybe take a shot in that situation or at least
hard count. Maybe he gets them to jump, but if you take the delay of game, then you back up for the punt. I mean, I just don't know no idea what Tomlin was thinking.
Yeah, living in his fears, I guess.
Yeah. Now, I think one, I'll give him more grace for, and this is easier to say in the hindsight of a win, but the decision to punt late in that game with 3 minutes left. What was the situation? It was 4th and 2. Yeah, 4th and 2, 4:40 left at the Steelers 30. I'm okay with the punt. I was okay with it at the moment, and I know hindsight's 20/20. It all worked out, but I understand being so backed up that the decision to punt there, you know, I can live with.
Right, because if you don't get it, it feels like you're giving them 3 points in that situation, I guess.
Right. But I think the 52-yard decision just...
And plus your defense had been playing very, very well that second half.
Absolutely. But the decision to kick that field goal, just a horrendous one. One of the worst decisions Tomlin's made the entire year.
Okay.
All right. Any other final thoughts here? We're running long, but there was so much to talk about in this game.
Yeah, I would have liked to see the special teams step up a little bit more than they did. You know, I have a feeling we would be talking quite a bit about the missed field goals had they lost that game. That and the ineptitude of the offense. But figured it was going to be a low-scoring game. It was. And they buried the drive when they needed it the most.
Yeah, and Presley Harvin, three punts for almost 47 yards, had one inside the 20 at 55 yarders. So I think he certainly outpunted AJ Cole. So kudos there. But so for Pittsburgh and their playoff situation, can you just kind of sum up where this team is at heading into the weekend in terms of things to watch for as Steelers fans?
Yeah, specifically today, the Packers play the Miami. Well, to go back to Saturday, they got some help because the Bengals beat the Patriots and the Titans lost to the Texans. So that was some needed help there. As far as the Sunday game today, Christmas Day, I think it's the first game too. The Packers on the road against the Dolphins. Got to root for the Packers in that one. And then Monday night, ideally, the Chargers would lose to the Colts. The thing that cannot happen is both the Dolphins and the Chargers winning over the course of these next 2 days. Just cannot. That would eliminate the Steelers right there.
Okay. So if that happens, if both those teams win, the Steelers are out. Is that
right,
the scenario?
Right. Okay. Right now, there is technically, let's see, you've got the Chiefs are in, the Bills are in, the Bengals and the Ravens are in the playoffs on the AFC side, and whichever team wins the AFC South, which is obviously going to be either the Colts or the Jaguars there. So technically you could say there's five teams in and there's two spots open. Mm. Here's the thing about the Chargers due to the Raiders losing and the Jets losing. If the Chargers beat the Colts on Monday night, the Chargers are in, and that leaves one open spot, assuming the Dolphins lose to the Packers. So, once again, it right now it all revolves around the Chargers and the Dolphins.
Gotcha. Well, the good news is for Christmas Day, the Steelers are still alive, and by the time we talk on Monday tomorrow, the Steelers will still be alive, either because the Chargers or just because the Chargers haven't played yet, and maybe they'll definitely be alive if the Dolphins lose today. Correct. So we'll find out. But it's a good day. It was a great ceremony last night. I thought Pittsburgh, as you knew, Pittsburgh all class and honoring Franco Harris. The moment of silence, Cam Hayward running onto the field, carrying the 32 flag, the halftime ceremony with Franco's wife, his son.
Very classy. Very classy. Yeah. It's too bad the network cut away. I know a lot of people were angry about, you know, the network cutting away, you know, halfway through that and all. But just very touching, even the pregame stuff, you know, with even early in the day with all the things the networks had to say during their pregame shows and all like that. And I just thought it was very tastefully done, you know, by the Steelers and obviously with emotion as well too. So yeah, it just really was handled really, really well other than, you know, the network cutting away.
Right. Now that I think the whole ceremony, correct me if I'm wrong, Dave, is on YouTube. The Steelers had a link to a live stream. Is that the entire ceremony? Do you know?
I believe so, yeah, and it's on their website as well, too.
Okay.
And I believe it is the whole 18, 20 minutes, whatever it is, and it shows the cut-ups, the former players talking and all like that.
Okay, so if you're mad about the networks cutting away, we get that, but go to either Steelers.com, type in the Steelers channel on YouTube, and you should be able to see the whole thing. You may have to click the live button because YouTube kind of moves stuff around, but it should be there for you guys. And then just the last honoring they did, really, with the first thing they did was every single player, and I think it was a tweet that said every single staffer in that Steelers building wearing Franco's jerseys, they entered the tunnel in that game, before kickoff. A really cool moment to see the entire organization from Hayward to Pickett, even Omar Khan wearing Franco's 32.
Yeah. And I think Thomas said that was Pat Freiermuth's idea. So,
which is awesome. Yeah. Penn State to Penn State. So anyway, we'll wrap this thing up. I know it's Christmas Day and everybody, has things to do. So just wanted to touch on the win here. Dave and I will come back tomorrow, but a great win and a great night.
Absolutely. And we'll be back on Monday and we'll see if the all 22 is out by then or not. And reader emails and all like that. In the meantime, hope everybody is having a very enjoyable holiday, Christmas, and We will get back at it on Monday. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow Alex on Twitter at Alex_Kozora. Shout out to the staff as well, too. We work late on Christmas Eve, so we appreciate their time as well, too. Follow Alex on Twitter at Alex_Kozora. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and want to donate, SteelersDepot.com. Hit the donate button. Also, if you want an ad-free version of the site, hit the ad-free button upright navigational bar. Until Monday, Merry Christmas. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Alex.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.